Tonight at Film Forum, actor Tony Roberts will be honored for his lead role in Woody Allen's Annie Hall, as well as for his many other significant accomplishments on the screen and on stage. He's appeared in 23 Broadway shows, received 2 Tony Award nominations, won the London Critics Poll Award for the original West End production of Promises, Promises. His on-screen credits include Serpico, the original The Taking of Pelham, 6 Woody Allen films, and 4 TV series. He's recorded over 50 audiobooks, including the long-running Stone Barrington series by Stuart Woods, and he's written a memoir, which brought him to our show a while back, called Do You Know Me? He plays Max Kellerman in Dirty Dancing, which will air on ABC TV on May 24th. All of which brings Tony Roberts back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Leonard. You hit every point.
I was worried I might leave something out.
I can go home now.
Next month is the 40th anniversary of the release date of Annie Hall. When did you last see it?
Actually, I started watching it a few weeks ago on Turner Classic Movies, which is like opening an album of everybody I ever knew and ever worked with. It's a wonderful
And was it what you remembered, how you remembered it?
Or? It's difficult to watch because it forces me to try to remember exactly who I was 45 years ago when it was made. And that's very awkward in many ways. You can't really go back there.
A lot of actors say they don't like to watch themselves on screen under any circumstances.
Yes, I know. It's very dangerous because you see things about yourself that you obviously wish were different, and you don't really notice anybody else on the screen. So it's a powerful experience. A lot of people shy away from it.
Annie Hall was a breakthrough film of sorts for Woody Allen in that he dropped just doing straight comedy in favor of telling a somewhat poignant story. Was there concern at the time about how audiences might respond to this new Woody Allen?
Well, I don't think he set out to tell the story that ended up on the screen. I think he originally titled the movie Anhedonia, which was a word the studios were not too happy about. But which
what
meant,
does it mean?
Yeah, it means that an inability to enjoy anything. And about three-quarters of the way through the movie, he began to realize he was telling a very deep love story that a lot of people obviously found was resonant. And he said to me at some point, I've got to change things because it's so compelling. But I don't think he knew at the time or set out to really reveal that much about himself or about his attitude towards love and so on and so forth.
Marshall Brickman, who collaborated on a number of the scripts in those days, suggested that Woody, who had just turned 40 in 1975, was concerned about advancing age and worries about death, and that's at 40. Did you get that sense when you were filming it?
I had the sense that he felt that way when he was about 6 or 7 years old.
How long have you known Woody Allen?
I didn't meet him until I was 25 years old. I was in a Broadway show. I'd replaced Robert Redford in Barefoot in the Park on Broadway, and I was in it for about 18 months. And David Merrick wanted me for the lead in Woody's first play that he was going to produce on Broadway. And I auditioned for it 5 times. And finally, Mr. Allen, Woody, Max, came into my dressing room one night after a performance. And he said, "You are very good." He said, "I'm going to give you the part." He said, "Why are you such a terrible auditioner?" And, of course, every actor hates auditioning more than anything in the world. And that's when I met him, and that's when we started to get to know each other. But it took a very long time until we actually became close friends. It wasn't for 2 years until we were in Played Again, Sam together on Broadway for many months, about 10 months, I guess. And then it was different because we were both performing and hanging around backstage and finding out who we really were. And he became more of a peer than someone I looked up to and admired and was in awe of because of his gifts.
Well, he must have liked you enough to cast you in any number of films.
Well, that was something we never discussed. I never knew whether I was going to be in another one or not. He would sometimes say to me, "What are you doing in 3 months?" And I would say, "I'm doing this," or "I'm not doing anything." And he would say, "Well, don't accept anything until you call me," he said, "because I think I may have something." And that's how it worked. I was always surprised. I was disappointed when I wasn't in one. But I never spoke to him about any of that because I thought that's really not my area. I'm just the actor.
You mentioned replacing Robert Redford on Broadway in Barefoot in the Park. Every successful actor has a lucky break. Was that yours?
Yes, I would say it was. I'd been in four Broadway plays before that, but in smaller roles and in things that closed rather quickly, which was a great godsend, actually, because I got to meet a lot of different people and work with different actors, and I learned from, you know, each experience. So when Barefoot came along, I got the part because I was an understudy to the understudy, and the understudy broke his ankle in a Broadway Show League baseball game, and I saw it happen, and I said, holy smoke, that guy's broken ankle could be my big break. And that's what
his break was. Your break.
Precisely. Poor guy. It gave me 18 months of employment, which I was very grateful for.
Well, one of the cliche questions that people have for people who started the way you did is, do you have a preference, theater or film? Many actors who started in theater do say, well, even though they usually say very diplomatically, well, I love doing movies, but I always feel that desire to get back to the stage.
I prefer the stage much more. It's much more immediate. It's much more in my control. I can't stop if I don't like what I'm doing.
You can't do a retake.
Not in any way. But if people are walking up the aisle or they're not laughing when they're supposed to, there's something you can do about it. And once the movie is filmed, of course, you go to see it with a bunch of strangers and there's nothing you can do about any of it. So it's out of your control. The movies are a director's medium and the stage is an actor's medium, and it'll always be that way.
When you're performing each night, you're getting different feedback from your audience. On the other hand, sometimes nowadays you also get cell phone rings.
Well, I once took a cell phone away from a gentleman in the front row, which led to a lawsuit that the Schuberts were not happy about. But it's funny. I once knew Zira Mostel when I was a kid, and he told me, he said, you know, every performance is different in an eight-show week. He said, sometimes it depends upon what kind of day you had. You don't even know what's going to influence your energy that night or your optimism that night or whatever it is you need to get going. But at least it was something that he had command of, and I always felt that way too. You also get something back differently from the actors you're with. They had different days and come in with a different energy or a different way of saying a line that if you're listening, it'll make you say your line a little differently, which is a discovery you go through every night, eight times a week, if you run 3 months or 3 weeks or 3 years.
Although a number of actors have told me that they like a long run. People assume that you get bored, but they like a long run because they keep on learning more and more about their character.
That's very true, but it's also true you learn more and more about your peers, and you become a community, which for actors is difficult. It's hard to rehearse at home when you're all alone, and when you're out of work, you don't have that family. So you share birthdays and holidays and tragedies and successes and marriages and so on and so forth. So it becomes a very important element in your life to be in a run and something that lasts long enough to get familiar with the whole crew and the costume department and the rest of the cast, etc.
Talking with actor Tony Roberts, and following tonight's screening of Annie Hall, actor-producer John Mitello will interview you about your long theater, television, and film career, including your six roles in Woody Allen films. What are questions that you would like to be asked?
Gee, Leonard, that's so prescient because I've been worrying for the last week what questions I will be asked.
I'm sure there are a fair number that make you cringe that you've had over the years. My mother, who was an actor, told me when I started doing this show and she knew that I'd be talking to actors, one thing, promise me you'll never ask, how do you remember all of those lines?
That's the first question my relatives ask me when they come backstage.
And I've never asked it of an actor. She said, that's what we do, Leonard.
Yes, yes. Well, I took a cue from Anthony Hopkins, who I actually worked with once upon a time. And he said he learns the lines by saying each line over and over again with a different emphasis on every word until he can figure out what that line could possibly mean. And once he's gone through all of that in his head, he knows that line so well that when he shows up on the set to say it, when they yell, roll 'em, in action, he doesn't know how it's going to come out of his mouth, which in real life none of us do. We respond to what's coming out of our mouths, which is very difficult to do if you know what the next line is. So
is that your technique as well?
Well, you can't avoid knowing what the next line is without becoming very panicked. Julie Andrews used to say, don't worry about it. The line fairy will land on your forehead at exactly the right time and give you the line, except, of course, when it doesn't. But if you've tried everything out that you can think of that it might mean when you say it, it informs you with a confidence that you can tell a story. And you may not know exactly what story you're telling before that line comes out of your mouth, but it's going to be in the realm of acceptability because you've already lived through what its implications might be.
That Anthony Hopkins story reminds me of something you've said, the advice that you've given to people who want to record audiobooks. You've done 50 audiobooks or so. You said, read 5 minutes of newsprint every day for 2 weeks into a tape recorder and then listen to it back. You'll learn more about how to speak into a microphone than anyone could ever teach.
Yes, I wish I could take credit for thinking of that, but that was something my father told me. My father was an announcer, and he gave me that advice early on, and it works. You self-correct. You begin to hear that you go up at the ends of sentences, or you don't, and of course you shouldn't, but most people do these days. It drives me crazy. Uptalk, I think they call it. And there are so many you knows thrown into the newscasts and everything. You wonder, what did people do before the word you know came
along? Or I mean is another.
Or I mean. Anyway, that's another subject. But thank you for reminding me that that's the right way to learn how to read into a microphone.
Did you record your own memoir? Do you know me?
I did record my own memoir, and I don't know how many people have listened to it. I've forgotten what's in my memoir because it took so long to write and I made so many different versions that at this point I'm kind of anxious to remind myself, and yet I'm not so anxious to remind myself what actually is in the final copy.
You wrote that memoir. You revealed all sorts of things that I found interesting, like working for David Merrick in 5 Broadway shows. You said he brought a sense of power into the room, an unspoken threat that you better not give him any trouble.
Yes.
That must have been fun.
Well, it was a little like our current president, if I might say. I was at a benefit years ago when he came on the stage at the end of it, and it was like an entrance of Scarpia in Tosca, you know, when the lights go down and it gets dark and there are 4 or 5 henchmen on stage in long coats. And at this point, he had no political aspirations that I knew of, but boy, did he scare me.
Could you talk a bit about the remake of Dirty Dancing that is going to be on ABC? Who else is in it?
Some wonderful people. We shot it in North Carolina last April, and Abigail Breslin plays Baby, and she's marvelous, and as is everybody else in the cast. Forgive me if I'm not so quick with names at the moment.
Well, let me throw out one. Good. In the original Dirty Dancing, Max Kellerman, your part, was played by Jack Weston.
Yes. Yes, Jack and I did a television series.
And you've worked on other things together.
Well, I don't know. I thought that was the only thing we did. Were we in something else?
No, maybe not.
Oh. Anyway, we had an interesting time. We're making a television series produced by Alan Alda at the time.
Yeah, the 4 seasons.
The 4 seasons. And unfortunately, it didn't last for more than 1 season. But we had fun making it, and it was great to know Jack. And I never in a million years believed that he and I would be playing the same character.
How close is the remake of Dirty Dancing to the original?
Well, it's very different. It has a lot of added songs, and
New choreography, I assume.
Great choreography by Andy Blankenbuehler, who's the choreographer for Hamilton. And he's a wonderful guy, and they had, you know, they were a very big production, about 200 or 300 extras, and at least about 30-35 professional dancers come up. And it's different than the original because it's not really as much of a replica of 1963, which is where the original one was set, even though it was shot in 1987. So now they've sort of adapted the culture of that era to something much more contemporary. So there
nobody remembers the Catskills anymore.
Exactly, but the Blue Mountains can look an awful lot like the Catskills, with waffle houses everywhere. So it was fun to be there for a while.
Just one more thing: we have very little time. Didn't your acting teacher Alvina Krauss say the theater was the last best chance to save the world?
That was what she said, and it inspired her students at Northwestern for the rest of their lives, because she really gave a very serious purpose to...
Well, how does that apply now to our current divided America?
Well, there'll be plays. There are already plays. There's there are productions of Arturo Uy all over the place, which are sort of similar in what's going on now.
We have a new 1984 coming.
That as well. There'll be other plays. There was a marvelous piece by Herman Melville written in the end of the 20th century, 19th century, what am I saying, called The Confidence Man. I hear music, so that must mean I'm on my way out. But thank you so much for having me here, Leonard. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a pleasure having you here, Tony Roberts. If you want ticket information about the tribute at Film Forum, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org/lopate. Hope to see you again soon.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you.